When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Testaverde will take the snap, go to one knee. This game is over. The Jets lock up their first playoff appearance since 1991 on a 21-16 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Naked dog, the crap, I apologize a trillion times. 106, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Yankees get pounded by the Baltimore Orioles, lose 2 out of 3. The finale was not pretty as they got pounded. And Luis Gil, who's had an incredible start to his year, who is this young phenom who is pitching as well as anyone in the American League, and we were talking about whether he's going to start the All-Star break, and now we're talking about whether he needs to be shifted to the bullpen because the league's figured him out. It's crazy how fast things happen. But he did have absolutely nothing. It was the biggest start of the year for him, and I'll say this, because when you look at this, and you know, when you look at this starting rotation and how good it's been, and you can make the argument, you know, Philadelphia's had great starting pitching this year too, but you can make the argument the Yankees have had the best starting staff in all of baseball this year. And Luis Gil just ruined the record of consecutive starts of a starting pitcher at least going 4 innings. One that, you know, some 100 years, like it's literally one of the, like a crazy record. And having said that, in some of the biggest moments, the only bad starts that we have seen from these starters have come in these big series. Whether it's Rodon pitching against Baltimore in that first series and then Fenway, or whether it's obviously Luis Gil in this biggest moment of his career so far in a big series against Baltimore. So their strength, without question, yes, the offense, yes, Judge, yes, Soto, Stanton, no doubt, they've scored a lot of runs. They've done a nice job offensively. It could be better, no doubt. The bottom of the lineup could be a lot better, but they've scored some runs, and Judge is still, you know, the greatest hitter alive. But the strength has been the starting rotation, without question. And they went into this series with a clear advantage in the starting pitching. And over the next course of however many months, you know, 2 months, whatever, until the trade deadline, they're going to continue to have the advantage in the starting rotation over the Baltimore Orioles. They are. You could tell me the Baltimore Orioles are better all day long. That's fine. You could, until I'm blue in the face, you could tell me until you're blue in the face, should I say. It doesn't change the fact that the Yankees' rotation is far superior. Far superior, at least right now due to injury. And we'll see how the Orioles respond and what they do at the trade deadline. But this rotation's got to come through in the big moments. And that's been the one thing where you could look at it. Rodon, who's having a great year. Rodon, who's having a bounce-back year. Rodon, who's coming back not only from the worst, you know, productive-wise season of his career, but also trying to justify the contract he got and try and get back into the good graces of the Yankee fans, considering how awful he was year one between injury and just terrible pitching, has really had a good year, except against the Orioles, except in Fenway. And now, I don't know if you want to deem this a big series. I don't know if this would make your marked on the calendar segment of this Yankee schedule. For those of you who, you know, deem that they can't beat good teams, I'm not sure where you put the Braves and whether or not they're worthy of that list. I'd love for you to tell me now before the series is played, though, as opposed to reacting to it after. But whatever you think, this is a big series. The pitching matchups are tough from Atlanta, and the New York Yankees against this Atlanta Braves team that has, you know, really offensively, especially since Acuña went down, has really underachieved big time, and the offense has gone really quiet. But they are a good team with a talented bunching, 10 games over 500, and are going to throw some damn good pitching at him. This is a big series. Both teams, as we'll get to the Mets at some point here, 888-808-1019, The Mets as well. A big series against the Cubs starts today at 2:20 or 2:20 in the afternoon. Big series against Chicago as they look to continue their positive momentum, continue their winning ways, and continue their winning series over the last handful, and they're thrusting themselves back into a legitimate pennant race here in wild card race. They're looking to continue the momentum, and the Yankees are looking to build some new momentum against the Braves. So a couple of big series this weekend for both baseball teams. We'll get to it. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Mark in California. What's up, Mark?
What's going on?
What's up, buddy?
What's that? Listen, man, so I was telling a friend of mine, I was just like, the Yankees just do this every year. Last couple years, they haven't obviously been this hot, but they didn't obviously have Soto and Judge. But I'm right with you. I said Aaron Judge is by far a better hitter than Soto, pure hitter than Soto.
I mean, I don't think there's any doubt he's a better player than Juan Soto. He just is.
You know what? And the thing is when the Yankees traded for him, every Yankee fan in the entire world was like, we want him, we want him. I was the only one that was saying, because of the reason that the Yankees have been struggling the last couple of years, they needed someone to compliment him. Well, why not go out and get Soto? But if you are looking at Soto's first year as a Yankee, moving forward and paying him all that money, Steinbrenner, because if I was him, you already know the Yankees would have him and give him anything. But if you're Cashman, and if the Yankees miss out on winning a World Series title, the reason why they got Juan Soto, compliment him, and obviously pieces are going to be had, right? If they go out and they make the trade for Pete Alonso, which will never happen, but if that does happen, right. Oh my gosh, could you imagine him or Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Could you imagine the pipe dream with him with all the guys in Stanton, resurgent year and all that stuff, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, Soto's better than both of those players.
Correct. But is he worth $600 million? No, he's not.
I mean,
no.
Nobody is.
Right.
If you want to make that argument, nobody is.
What about Ohtani?
Is Ohtani worth $700 million right now? Do you think so?
His hitting? No. But if he comes back and has a year.
I know, but he's coming back from Tommy John. I don't know how long he's going to pitch. I mean, and I know the contract ultimately isn't $700 million. I understand that with all the deferrals and whatever. But, I mean, I don't think anyone right now.
If the team like the Mets makes pounds for Soto, get Soto, would you as a Yankee fan and me as a Yankee fan be disappointed?
Of course. Oh, no. Come on.
Right?
Come on. I mean, listen, Mark, you're doing it. I mean, the guy, while he's not Judge is the best hitter in the league. It's not a knock to say he's not as good as Judge. Judge is the best. In my mind, without question, Judge is the best hitter in Major League Baseball. He is. He's been so for the last 3 years. So to say Juan Soto is not Judge is not an insult. Juan Soto, right now, and they're always a game behind, so this doesn't include today's stats, so the batting average might be down a touch or whatever. But Juan Soto currently leads the league in runs scored with 60. He leads the league in walks with 59. He leads the league on base percentage with .435. He's hitting .312 and has an OPS of 1.018. What are we talking about? If that guy's not a Yankee next year, yeah. Did you just say, What are you, nuts? If Juan Soto is in a Yankee next year, I'm devastated. Have you watched him play? Yes, he's not Judge. Granted. And he had two bad plays in the outfield in this series. One that cost him the game-winning run the other night. Not the game-winning run, but the fifth run and the run that scored when Henderson was put on base by the retaliation. But he had a line drive right at him he struggled with yesterday. He had a line drive right at him that struggled the night before. He's actually been a far better outfielder. Actually, Lou in Astoria, who's a good Yankee fan, I think misguided a lot, but a good Yankee fan. And he sent me a message saying Soto's a one-dimensional player. Soto is far better defensively than we give him credit for. He missed two plays, I guess, in the outfield. Verdugo's a tremendous defensive outfielder. He had a line drive where he took two steps in and watched it run over his head a week ago. Like, it happens. He's been far better defensively from the beginning of the year, throwing guys out at home in huge moments against the Astros. Oh, I forgot that series doesn't matter because the Astros aren't good now. I keep mentioning that series like it mattered out the gate against the team that constantly ends their season. But no, I forgot. They're 5 games under 500 now. Zip. Let's not mention that series again. Meaningless. But, I mean, he's playing good defense. He's been solid out there. He's run the bases better than he's led the league in runs scored. I'm devastated if he's not here. And yes, is he worth $500 million? That's a different question than does he deserve $500 million? Because yes, he deserves it. At this age, with the numbers everyone else is getting, no question. You're going to get him at 26, 27 years old. For 10 years, 12 years, 13, you got him until he's 40, you get 14, 13 years of Juan Soto. You have to do it. And I just saw an article saying all the, you know, executives around Major League Baseball expect him to stay. I don't know what's going to happen. But, of course, I mean, Juan Soto has made an enormous difference. He's just not Judge. But, hey, in 4 years, he'll be 30, and Judge will be 36. Who knows? Matt in Manhattan, what's up, Matt?
Hey, you know, for Sutherland films, I think I got to go with Ordinary People and Don't Look Now.
Ordinary People, obviously, famous. I think it won Best Picture. Right, Jane Fonda and Judd Hirsch, right? He's the psychiatrist. It doesn't matter. But yes, that was a good movie. I don't know what was the other one you said?
Don't Look Now. If you don't know it, I would highly recommend it.
Don't Look Now. I got to look at his...
from the 70s, directed by Nicholas Roeg. I don't know if you know any of his films. He's
no.
Done some very notable ones. But it's got... check it out. Julie Christie's in it. Donald Sutherland are the parents of a child that dies and they go away. And it's sort of about their relationship. So I'm just saying for dramatic roles. I mean, he was male lead. The movie, it's really good.
Okay, yeah, no, I'll check it out.
But anyway, about the Yankees.
Yes.
I'm going to agree with almost all your points, but still come away probably a bit more negative than you.
Sure.
Like I don't care in any way about throwing at people. Like that's stupid. I don't care. I don't care particularly that. I mean, I care that it was the Orioles, but I don't think that 3 games against any one team actually means much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
I do care though about the bullpen because the advanced metrics really did indicate that the Yankees were overperforming the bullpen, and now it's kind of come back to roost. And when you look at guys with track records and the rest of it, I mean, there may not be that much there, and they're going to have to do something with that. No, it's okay. Like, teams like the Yankees can do that. But I'm going to come back to the point I made in your show before, and it's not what hurt them against Baltimore, but this lineup, if you look at, if you compare their lineup with Baltimore, there is no comparison. Yankee lineup, 5-9, it's a sub-average lineup, and that's not going to sustain itself against really good teams in the playoffs. It's just not. And they need to replace people. LeMahieu, I don't understand. I mean, I know that you've been a big supporter. You hit 800 OPS last year for a few weeks. Maybe that meant
the entire second
around,
half, the entire second half of the season.
But he finished with 7-14. So he had a bad year.
Well, he had a bad he had a bad first half. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the thing is that Yankee fans ran Aaron Hicks and Gary Sanchez out of town. Numbers similar to what LeMahieu is doing. Somehow LeMahieu is getting it treated a little bit differently.
Well, there was different element. One, he's under contract getting paid. It's harder to get rid of him.
Yes, it's not a good contract.
Yeah, but. And two, I mean, he also brings, he's very good defensively. He plays third and first.
He runs to the, I mean, you can time him with a sundial.
Yeah, no, he can't run. I agree. He can't run with the foot, especially now he can't run. Anything on the ground's a double play. I don't love him, but
you don't think they're overreacting to Verdugo either? I mean, he's not doing great. He's okay.
He's been enormous for them. Enormous.
How can you even say that?
Do you see the defensive play? Yeah, but you see 735. Okay. Let's go. You want to go back and look at all the different guys?
Average.
All right. You want, let's go look at the different teams of 2000 and let's go look at Scott Brosius's OPS. Or let's go look at...
Scott Brosius, actually, in 98.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it.
I know.
They won three. Hey, they won two.
You're never
going to
hear me saying that he was right.
I'm saying. Nice. But sometimes you don't need a great player at every position. Go look at the Dodgers right now, and they're 5-9.
I totally agree with you. But the thing is if five through nine is sub average, I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to be great at every position, but if it's sub average, and two of those positions that are really sub average are first base and third base, you have to fix that.
Yeah,
you
I agree. Why can't they?
No, I'm saying they can't. They can. They need to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. They need to go get a corner infielder. I agree. One or the other. Third or first. I'm with you. Unless Rice goes crazy, and I don't expect that. 100%, though. I agree with you. You need another offensive player. There's no doubt. Then now they need a bat. I was saying it yesterday. I'm with you. But, I mean, now to get on Verdugo, I get it. One, defensively, he's the best defensive left fielder in the sport right now. That matters. Did you see the play he made in center field to save them all those runs? That was an incredible play. He's not even a center fielder. That was an incredible play. He has been a breath of fresh air. He's been a gamer in the big moments. His first at bat in Fenway, back in front of that crowd, hits the home run. I think he's going to end up being a good postseason player for the New York Yankees. I think he's a gamer. I love Verdugo. No, he's not a world-class player. He might not even be an all-star this year, although I think he's right there. But no, I mean, he's not a great player, but he's a good, solid player. And a little bit of a gamer. Because it's just you don't know. I mean, again, I don't want to throw this stuff out at you because ultimately I don't disagree with your point on some level. But, like, look at... Like, if you want to look at different teams, like or guys who came through, like, you know, Steve Pierce won a World Series MVP heading into the postseason. I'm sure you'd have been like, look, the bottom of this Red Sox lineup, yeah, they've had a great year. But, I mean, you're talking about, you know, Bradley Jr. You're talking about Steve Pierce. I mean, you're talking about a back end of that lineup that's just, I mean, come playoff time, it's going to really be a problem. I just don't know. I mean, you don't know. They're going to have to come through and play well, but I don't think it's such a bad bottom of the lineup that they can't win. But you can't have a light-hitting DJ LeMahieu who's still, again, I want to give him more time. I'm not saying he's been good or that I'm fine with DJ LeMahieu. I'm open to making that change. But it's still, he's just getting his feet wet, coming back from injury. And, you know, in this series, he got a couple. It's not like he was terrible. He got some hits in this series. He got a hit yesterday. I know the game's out of hand. Probably no one watched it or cared. But he hit a ball hard the other way. He got two hits the other night. Like I think he got four hits in this series. It's definitely three. I think it's four, but I might be wrong. It's either three or four hits in the series. You get a hit a game. I mean, he's not terrible. I don't like what I've seen from him yet either, and no power to speak of. Totally agree. They need to get a better corner infielder. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be a major, major upgrade, but I've mentioned a name. I mentioned a guy named Bobby Malone on Twitter who's been at least the first guy I saw bring up Rengifo, the third baseman from the Angels, who they're clearly out of it. I mean, he's hitting 300, nice little player, could definitely add to this Yankee team, you know, with certainly athleticism. He can run different things. Totally agree. I'm open to all of that. But I'm not at the point where you could say, look at 5-9, this team can't win. I don't agree. I mean, they've led when it comes to the postseason, they've scored runs. Even against the Orioles here, they've scored runs. Like, who shut them down? They were shut out five times at the beginning of the year before Judge was a monster. Like, they still score runs. They've been scoring runs, like, at the top of the league. What else could you want? What else could you want? Like, look around and tell me who's better. Like, I understand we should be hyper-focused on the Yankees and or the Mets or whatever team we're looking at. And don't look at other teams. Stay focused on the Yankees. And that's fine. And I get it. But they also compete with other teams. Like, who scored more runs better than them? Who's done it better? The Orioles. Their lineup is clearly better. That's about it. And what pitching staff has completely shut down the Yankees? We just have it in our heads that this team can't win in the postseason. It's different. Every year's different. They've got Volpe at the top of the order. They got the two behemoths in the middle of the order. They'll probably add a guy. But, you know, I think Verdugo is going to be a big thing, and if Stanton can stay healthy all year, Stanton in the middle of the lineup's a force too. No one has a good hitting catcher. Very few teams have good hitting catchers. Like it's the nature of the beast. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. If you're just listening, you heard a caller mention Donald Sutherland movies. Again, on these five-hour midnight rides, I like to incorporate either movies or music. So, unfortunately, yesterday, in my mind, the great Donald Sutherland, father of Kiefer Sutherland, who's really my guy, passed away at 88. And so if you want to call with a Donald Sutherland movie, there's a ton of them. He's been doing from, you know, a million years ago, MASH, to up till recently, the movies with Jennifer Lawrence. What was it? Hunger Games. Thank you. But I wanted to say one other thing about Donald Sutherland, and this opens up the conversation to another unique thing. In my mind, as great as all these movies were, and as great as he was in Ordinary People, whatever else, my favorite three performances from Donald Sutherland can be classified as cameos. My favorite three performances from Donald Sutherland are Animal House, where he plays the teacher that they get a little high with. Backdraft, where he plays the arson who is about to get parole. And Robert De Niro's character goes there and, you know, makes sure that the guy doesn't get paroled by bringing out the evil in him. And then as Mr. X in JFK, where he lays it all out for Kevin Costner on a great scene on a park bench, where he just like lays out all the different elements of all the different conspiracy theories and everything. Like, those are my three favorite Donald Sutherland performances, and they're all kind of cameos. So yes, you can call me up with Donald Sutherland stuff, but if you want to call me up with some of your great and your favorite cameos, you can do that too, because for me, those are my three favorites. Those are three of the great, you know, non-comedic, well, although, yeah, I guess Animal House is comedic. But when I really love the Backdraft and the Mr. X in JFK.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
All right, 133. McMonagle here with you on the Fan on this Friday morning, as both our baseball teams will look to a big weekend series. The Mets will start against the Cubs this afternoon. The Yankees look to take on the Braves. I'm taking the kids on Saturday as sort of a belated type birthday present for the two of them. The previous weekends, the entire summer, they're playing baseball and t-ball, so the weekends just didn't work out, so to take them to a game wasn't, you know, plausible. So we're going to try and go Saturday, see the Braves and Yanks get it on, and hopefully they can figure out a way to turn this momentum, because right now the season's just, you know, on the brink with the best record in all of baseball, still a half a game out in front of this division. Other news around the sporting world, the Los Angeles Lakers have hired J.J. Redick to a four-year contract to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. And I mean, we'll see. I mean, he's been... What I find the most funny is that he replaces Van Gundy, and Redick is good, and Doris Burks is solid and really good as well. But the broadcast, I don't know. Again, it's 1 year that they're building chemistry. I love Breen and Van Gundy. I was disappointed when they let him go. I understand now he's won a championship with the Celtics, and he's going to become Tyronn Lue's number one assistant coach, and maybe he'll get back into being a head coach one day. I wish him well. But it's funny that ESPN let him go because they were concerned about his interest in getting back into the coaching game and didn't want to have to do this again. And yet there goes J.J. Redick leaving the broadcast booth, leaving ESPN. And I think he's done it to be the head coach. And I think he's done a decent job. You know, him going back and forth with, you know, Mad Dog in the studio about old-time players versus new-time players, that famous line about, you know, Bob Cousy, who, for whatever reason, my son asked for his jersey. Maybe he saw the J.J. Redick clip on YouTube or something. I don't know. But, you know, saying those guys played against plumbers and electricians in the offseason or whatever. Obviously, him and LeBron have a relationship. They do the podcast together. I wonder if that podcast is still... Can the NBA allow it? I don't see why not. A coach and player doing a podcast together? I mean, seems odd, but I suppose it's possible. But, I mean, he's going to be a guy who's never had any experience coaching, strictly based on the idea that he's intelligent about basketball, an NBA player. I suppose has the respect, although not a great player or a Hall of Fame type player at all. You know, could shoot, journeyman, played 15 years in the league. And, you know, with on the heels of the report of LeBron James not demanding to play with his son Bronny and all that's gone on, and we know how he's a coach killer and you know, runs the franchise. He brings in the guy he does a podcast with. I mean, it's kind of just a show. Now, they did almost try and do something drastically different and bring in Hurley. I remember when the story came out that J.J. Redick was always their first choice, but when the idea hit the table that they could possibly get Hurley, they said why not and ran after him, but had always had J.J. Redick in mind. I mean, he'll join a list of guys who have come, you know, pretty much right from playing, although he's done some broadcasting, without coaching, and it hasn't been that great. I mean, here we know of Derek Fisher and Steve Nash. I mean, two absolute failures. Fisher was horrendous. And Phil Jackson brought him in because, you know, he knew how to run the triangle. I mean, it was just an embarrassing hire. And Nash wasn't much better. I mean, brought in after, you know, the super team and Durant and Kyrie said, well, we don't really need a coach, so why not hire Steve Nash? Didn't work out well for him. Jason Kidd's had some success. I don't believe he was an assistant coach anywhere before. I think he came straight from doing whatever he was doing off his NBA career to be a coach with, obviously, the Nets. And obviously now he was just in the NBA Finals with the Dallas Mavericks. So he's had some success. But the Lakers are a tough job. Coaching LeBron James is a tough job. This roster is kind of in disarray. The two stars that have won a championship, to give them credit, I know it was in the bubble in 2020, but they have won a championship together. It just feels like a weird roster, a tough spot, and an interesting spot for a coach that has never had any experience and is going to try and come in and relate to these guys. And they've seen him on TV. They've seen him fighting the old guard, like Mad Dog or whoever else wanted to talk about how, you know, Jerry West was better than everybody or whatever he was arguing about. I think they respect him. They know he's played in the league. But ultimately, this is a very difficult job. One that comes with high expectations without a great roster and I think could easily sour quickly. But hey, I wish him the best. Why the hell not? And to be totally honest with you, I'm looking forward to a new broadcast. And I hope they bring back... they're not going to. Mark Jackson was pretty good too. I mean, you know, there goes that man again was said 10 times a broadcast, but... I mean, we'll see. And I'm wondering if this is a trend. I don't know if this marks a trend or not. Like, it's always... Because, like I said, a lot of the examples, whether it's, you know, Derek Fisher and Nash or whomever, they haven't been that great. Now, I know they've had some success, and, you know, players around the league in the NBA is so star-driven that guys like LeBron or whoever else can get the coach they want. And ultimately, in today's day and age, when it comes to spacing and shooting the three and the way it all works out and offensive gurus, like you get a player who's played in this league and, you know, knows the jargon and knows how they play today's day and age of basketball that really only the Knicks are trying to rival. It makes sense in many ways, but this is a tough job. And we'll see, you know, if the Lakers and Pelinka made the right move. And we'll see how it works with LeBron. As the story came out that, you know, he doesn't have to play with Bronny. And if he did, he would force them to draft him 17th. Like, there's just, the whole situation just seems weird there. It just, I mean, and LeBron, still a great player. Still a top, I don't know, 15 player in the NBA, maybe. Maybe even better than that. I mean, you're dealing with the superstar of all superstars fading. A team that has drastically underachieved. A team that, you know, LeBron handpicks who he wants to play with, a team that's failed over the last couple of years, And now with the whole LeBron's son entering the NBA draft, hovering over it, his relationship with him and the podcast they do, him coming with no experience whatsoever. I mean, it seems like a very difficult thing to succeed, but we'll see. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Vincent in Staten Island. What's up, Vincent?
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I usually want to speak about the Yankees, but I'm a little annoyed with the score they had today. But I will say one thing. Baltimore had two touchdowns and a field goal, and New York had a field goal and a touchback. But I really want to call about
safety.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm tired. I had a long day working.
I guess.
Safety. So you were talking about Donald Sutherland, and there was one movie that I thought you were going to bring up. It was one from the 60s, and I believe it was called The Dirty Dozen. He was in that movie.
He was in The Dirty Dozen. I'm looking at his career right here. I don't remember him in The Dirty Dozen. I probably have seen that movie once 100 years ago. I don't remember it well, so that doesn't ring the bell for me with Donald Sutherland. And
right,
there are other films, no doubt. I've seen MASH. That was really the one that kind of, I believe, got his career going. I've seen, but then it's like after Animal House, there's The Great Train Robbery, I remember. Ordinary People won a Best Picture, I believe. And then, like, another cameo. Oh, man, it just, the Nick of Time, not Nick of Time. It's, what's the movie? With,
Japanese movie?
No. With him and, A Time to Kill. A Time to Kill. Great movie with, Matthew McConaughey and Samuel L. Jackson, where Samuel Jackson, murders a couple of guys who, you know, did terrible things to his daughter, and then he's on trial, and Matthew McConaughey's the lawyer, and Donald Sutherland plays like a disgraced, drunk, former great lawyer that's kind of the mentor, and like he's good in these cameos. Like, that's another cameo. I mean, A Time to Kill is a great movie, famous movie. Yes, I think they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell. That's a Samuel L. Jackson scene. So, I mean, he's really good at those, like, subtle roles where he's... And that's what... And the Backdraft one. I don't know if you've ever seen Backdraft. That ability... Backdraft about the fireman. It took place in the 90s. It was, like, Kurt Russell and one of the Baldwin brothers. I always forget which Baldwin brother their names are. I don't think it's Billy. Is it Billy Baldwin? Maybe. Same guy in Sliver. But that scene where he's on parole... And he's trying to get out of prison, and he was an arsonist, and he was, you know, he burned buildings and people and everything. And Robert De Niro goes down to his hearing and brings up these pictures and different things and asks him all questions about the crimes he committed. And to see Donald Sutherland change from a guy who's, you know, sitting there with his hair slicked, you know, combed back nicely and trying to prove that he's, you know, rehabilitated and he's going to, you know, come out and be a model citizen and an addition to society, and to watch him slowly turn and have that crazy look in his eye with that evil smile and answer the questions that Robert De Niro asked him. Brilliant scene. Brilliant scene. Love it. It's the best scene of the whole movie by far. It's him and Robert De Niro. Tremendous. And then the JFK scene is great. I happen to love the movie JFK. It's a class. I don't pretend to think that everything in the movie is accurate, but that scene where he plays like a CIA agent in the know on a lot of the different things that happened and a lot of the conspiracy theories, it's like a 20-minute scene where he just goes through all the different stuff. I think that's the best scene of the movie. So two really good movies in the 90s where he steals the movie in these little cameos. Anthony in the Roxbury, talking about another movie, at the Roxbury. Anthony Roxbury, what's up, buddy?
Night at the Roxbury.
Night at the Roxbury, right.
Yeah, Donald Sutherland was in Kelly's Heroes with Don Rickles, Telly Savalas, Clint Eastwood. They were breaking into the bank with all the gold in it.
Can you turn the radio or TV down? It's killing me in the background. That's okay. Anyway. Yeah, what year was this now?
Probably like 1968, something like that.
Oh, so late. Yeah, okay. A long time ago. Yeah, I don't know that one either. The what was the name of it?
Kelly's Heroes. They were breaking into a bank in during World War II.
Yeah, I've never seen Kelly's Heroes. Nope, don't know.
Oh, it was a great movie. Anyway, and I forgot about that one thing he was in the Animal House with. He was sleeping with the guy's girlfriend.
Yeah, and he's got like no pants on when he comes in.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. He was good. I mean, Donald Sutherland was a great actor. He was in a ton of stuff. I mean, everyone's going to go back to these old movies that I really don't know that well from Donald Sutherland. I know him mainly, from this later stuff, those 90s movies where he was in a handful of, very popular films and in kind of these Lord of War. That's right. He was in Lord of War. I forgot about that. Like, that's when I know him from best. And then Reign Over Me, he plays the judge in Reign Over Me. I think that's another great cameo that he's in with the movie about Adam Sandler lost his family in 9/11 and kind of, loses his mind. And then obviously most recently, The Hunger Games. And that's where every story I've seen that he was passed, acknowledging that he's passed away and recognizing him, everything said Hunger Games attached to his name. Tommy in Astoria, what's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris, how you doing? Yeah, that guy just stole my thunder. Kelly's Heroes is the movie. I guess it's 1970, so yeah. I guess past my age, know it. You'd love it. I'm telling you, I think knowing you, I think it's the kind of movie you really like.
All right, I'll check it out.
Look, as a Mets fan, watching these Baltimore and Yankee games, I'm with you. I think, I'm old school. I really think you got to look at the team as the stronger starting pitching. And the Yankees, I mean, you look around the league, nobody has starting pitching like the Yankees do. I mean, 1-4, 1-5, this guy Schmidt comes back, they're loaded. I mean, some teams have like one or two top starters, but Baltimore's not going to be able to match him, I don't think, as the year goes on. I think that's one thing that's going to keep the Mets out of the wild card, is because their starting pitching is not going to match up against some of these other teams in the National League.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Mets starting pitching has actually been really, surprisingly good. And hopefully Kodai Senga is on his way back, whether it's, right around the All-Star break or however many, he'll need some rehab games. But, I mean, Severino got hit up a little bit his last start, but he's been really good. Manaea, they've been solid. They haven't been great. There's no real top of the rotation guy. There's no real going to shut you down type guy. Certainly, when you look across the division, to what the Yankees are going to see from Atlanta, what Philadelphia throws out there. But, I mean, through the rest of, there's no Wheeler in the staff. Unfortunately, there still should be. But when you look at the rest of this, all these teams you're battling with and jumbled up with in the wild card race, I don't know if they just dominate you with starting pitching. I mean, obviously, the Pirates – have the young phenom there, but I think the Mets could line up with any of these teams as far as the starting pitching goes. That's how good it's been. In fact, I look at these teams and I don't know who's like, in what way are the Nationals better? In what way have the Cubs been better? In what way are the Reds better? In what way are the Pirates better? Like, it's just, I mean, when I look at them and I look at these teams and all the flaws they have, as much as the Mets have been flawed and can't put consistency together, and that's been my main problem with the Mets. That's why I was getting, Fliegelman's mocking me the other day, because a few weeks ago I declared them dead, because it just felt like they never put momentum together. They never figure out a way to thrive on the positive. Like, it's always, it's a brief little fleeting moment, and then there it goes. And that's why this series is important. Coming off their first loss in 9 games, they're riding the 8-game winning streak, the grimmest winning streak, whatever you want to call it. They lose a game in Texas. And not, it's a disappointing loss. They had the lead. Bullpen blew the game. Offense didn't do much after, taking the lead. It's a disappointing game, but it's not anything that really jumps out at you as a horrendous loss. The Mets have had far worse losses, at least 5 or 6 off the top of my head, and probably more than that. And especially off an 8-game winning streak, you can live with it. But what you don't want is to now stack up losses. And this is a big series. You are literally tied with the Cubs heading in for one game back. Your percentage points below them, you know, one percentage point below them. But roughly, they have one more win and one more loss. They're 36 and 39. The Mets are 35 and 38. They are tied for one game back of the wild card. They've split a 4-game series already. This is a series you want to go in, continue to play well, continue to not lose series, continue to win series, get another tiebreaker against the team you're competing with, and build momentum. Like, the Mets, over the course of the last few years, and even this year, you know, since the end of 22, this is a series the Mets lose. Right, this is why I declared them dead, because this is a series the Mets lose. They have this great thing, right? They have the grimmest fun story. They win 8 in a row. They're playing extremely well. They just beat the defending champs in their building. They're going to go play a very important Cubs series with you know, this, the idea that they have this tiebreaker on the line against the floundering Cub team, and this is a game and a series they'll lose. Like, that's typical Mets. LOL Mets, typical Mets, is that they lose this series in Chicago. I want to see them come out and play well. It will tell me a lot if they can figure out a way to win this series and keep momentum, because they've really had a tough time with that. They've done it so far here over the last 2 weeks. They got to keep it. Andy in South Jersey. What's up, Andy?
Hey, Chris. How you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. Before I throw a couple of Sutherland movies out there and a comment on the Yankees, I was at that Giants event tonight at the Garden. And, it was fantastic. Some great stories. It was great to see several of the players there. Bavaro, everything he went through with the long COVID and all his depression, was great to see him there. And just a real fun evening, first-class event, and hopefully they can take that and translate it into some good action on the field this year.
I'm so sorry. I apologize. I took your call and I was reading something. You're talking about the Giant event, right?
Yeah.
You were there last night?
I was there last night.
That's all. Yeah, it looked like a lot. That was some dais. I mean, they've got some great coaches, great players. I mean, there's pictures of Tom Coughlin and LT shaking hands, like just bridging the generational gap with all these great players and coaches. That must have been a fun night.
Absolutely. I mean, they started out by bringing out Pete Gogolak, which was a nice surprise.
Pete Gogolak. Was he in the Dirty Dozen with Donald Sutherland or no?
I think that might not have been him.
No. Okay.
But he had some very good stories, a lot of fun, and again, a first-class event, like I said. Team Bavaro was the big highlight for me.
Yeah.
Big Bavaro guy.
Oh, yeah. No, my father loved Mark Bavaro, too. That's some of that 89 old school throwback Bavaro jersey is fire. Like, that's the best jersey the Giants have, is the throwback 89 Mark Bavaro jersey. It's
that is the one. I go on at least one Giants road trip every year, and that is the jersey I wear to every Giants game on the road.
I agree. There's something about that Mark Bavaro 89 jersey. I don't know what it is.
Yep. And, so I wanted to ask. The Sutherland movies, a couple of them just got mentioned. Kelly's Heroes, put it high on your to-do list. It's an excellent movie.
Okay.
Animal House, obviously, people mentioned. And then the other one he had a nice little bit role in was in Disclosure with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore.
Yeah, that's right. That's another one where he plays like the head of the company.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, very good.
That is Disclosure is a really good movie.
It is. It absolutely is. And MASH, he was great in. On the Yankees, you know, we're talking about bullpen. I've got my issues with how Boone runs the bullpen for the last several years. I think he just can't wait to get the guy out and bring in the next guy. I'm a believer in the more guys you roll out there, the more chance there is somebody's not going to have it that night.
Sure.
And I think he burns out the bullpen. I think it shows, you know, throughout the year. The other problem with that is, you know, it might work for the regular season when you can bring guys up and down from the minors. But once you get in the playoffs, you can't be doing that. You got to stick with the hand that you're playing with.
Right.
You can't keep pulling guys up and down. So if you start, you know, you're pulling your starters out at the first sign of trouble, and you're going through four and five relievers a night, You can't put, you know.
I don't think you can worry about burning guys out in the playoffs. The playoffs. You worry about burning them out over the course of the regular season. Not to say that there isn't something to be said about leaving your starter in, but I just, it's no longer a concern of mine of burning out. They're either burnt or, you know, now it's playoff time. You got to go to who you got to go to. But I don't know. I think he's been okay with the bullpen. It's not his strength, I guess. I don't know. It's the hardest thing to do as a manager. But, I mean, this year, they've given more depth than any. I mean, their starting rotation has to lead the league in innings pitched. They broke the record for consecutive starts without getting out of the fourth inning in every one of them. So, I mean, he's given them length this year.
It's more the idea of a guy that, you know, goes out and throws, you know, a 9-10 pitch inning, and boom, he takes him out the next inning. Let him throw the 2 or 3 innings. Let him sit a day or two and keep the other guys fresh for the next day. Because this goes to the next thing. I was at the second game against Baltimore. I was at the first game against the Dodgers. Both games we lost in extra innings. This team is awful when it gets into extra innings.
Yeah, with the new rule, they're awful.
And I think a lot of it has to do with he's got nobody left. He burns through everybody. I don't think so.
I really don't think so. Okay. I hear what you're saying. I think they don't have guys who strike people out. I think when you start with a runner at second base in the inning, a ground ball to second base moves a runner to scoring position, and now a fly ball scores a run. I mean, you need some strikeouts, especially with the runner at second base, and their bullpen, not just the closer, which I don't think is as big a deal as the overall bullpen. They don't have anybody. And that's the part with Clay Holmes, too. Like, you bring him into a game like that, he pitches the contact, something's going to happen where the run scores. Like, it's, you know, a ground ball to second kills you in this new format, where if it's a normal inning, it's an out, nobody's on base. So their bullpen, as good as it was for a lot of the year, I know no one's going to remember that, and as much as it's struggling right now, I don't believe they're you can't say the bullpen's burnt out. Their starting rotation's been given as much depth as any other team in baseball, and it's only June. The bullpen, they're just struggling for whatever reason. It's not about Boone, but I agree with you in extra innings. Their bullpen, specifically the closer, the issue with this new extra inning rule, this bullpen's not built for the extra inning rule. And the offense has too many sluggers in it where they don't manufacture runs as well, but I think it's more about the bullpen giving up more runs. But yeah, they've been awful in extra innings. Heading into the year, it's funny. Heading into the year, at home, I think they had the best record in baseball in extra innings, and on the road, the worst record in baseball in extra innings. But this team specifically this year has been dreadful in extra innings, and it has to do with not getting enough swing and miss in the bullpen. They're going to have to go out and get some guys.